So, welcome to this solo edition of Tech Talk. It's Sam McClary, Deputy Editor, Head of Content at VG, with no Emily Wright, because she is off on holiday. So apologies if you prefer her voice to mine, but you won't have to listen to it for long. A little bit of a shorter episode this week. But before we go straight into this week's interview, let's have just a little short news roundup of things that we've seen this week. So first is Amazon, that big friendly online retailer, has filed a number of trademark applications for its cashierless or cashier-free grocery stores. These are called Go, so they filed a number of these trademark applications to the UK's Intellectual Property Office and to the EU equivalent. Go stores allow customers to just walk in, take what they want and walk out without actually stealing. So you scan your Amazon account as you go in and it will register everything that you have picked up as you walk out the shop. So they say that these stores only require about 6 to 10 people in them to run them. There was a little story that broke a little while ago saying that they were going to try and open 2,000 stores. Amazon have denied that, aren't saying how many they are going to open, but could be a newcomer on the high street, maybe a bit of a competitor to Waitrose, Tesco, Lidl, Aldi, all the other stores out there. But we will wait and see if one of those stores does come about. Elsewhere in news, we always like to talk a little bit about what's going on in the world of AI. And apparently, for all the interior designers out there, do not fear the robots, because apparently you can't get an AI to do interiors. Research scientist Janelle Shane did try, and she found that the AI that was developed really only liked brown, beige and grey, which in the EG office would work, but anywhere else I'm not sure that it would. And also it couldn't really come up with decent names for any such colours. I will give you a few, see if you'd like to paint the inside of your office with them. There is the glorious title, this colour is kind of green, called Snowbonk. There is a pinky colour called Bank Butt. Maybe in the city they'll be using that. A dark blue colour called Dorkwood, quite like that one. And then we have other colours such as Dope, Stoner Blue, and Stanky Bean, and a slightly brown colour called Turdly. So if anyone does want to employ that AI to do their interiors, then I suggest you get on the phone to Janelle. But to stop me yabbering on about that, let's go straight into our interview, which this week was with Rob Riley and Howard Bottomley from Tap. And they're going to talk to us about how we sort of deal efficiently in real estate with tech, and how running our buildings is all going to come down to what we hold in the palm of our hand. So here they are talking about exactly what Tap is and what they hope to achieve. Rob, Howard, welcome to Tech Talk.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this grey day.
You're welcome.
So talk to us a little bit, or tell us a little bit about yourselves first, who you are, where you're from, likes and interests. Rob, kick us off.
Oh, okay, I'll start. Well, I mean, I'll speak for Howard and me. We're both surveyors, qualified chartered surveyors, and we've worked in the industry for a long time, 20-odd years each, post-qualification. My background in the real estate world is more transactional. I started off actually down in Docklands, way before Canary Wharf even existed, with what was then DTC, now DTZ. And got involved in broking almost by accident. I joined the industry.
Not even DTZ anymore, of course.
No, exactly, Cushman & Wakefield. And yeah, I was a non-cognate. I did a law degree and then converted into property. But it sort of went full circle when I ended up working at Canary Wharf as the on-site leasing and marketing director, which I guess was 5 years or so on-site, which was fascinating and totally absorbing. And that was with Richard Ellis, who then became Insignia Richard Ellis, and on their journey went. I then got moved out to New York to work for them out there, with some glamorous title of International Business Development Director or something like that, for a couple of years, and then came back, but maintained my broking background all the way through to where we are today.
And today you are at?
Today we are at TAP, which is the abbreviated word for, name for Tenant Assistance Programme, which Howard and I set up back in 2008.
And so how did the two of you meet? Where did your paths cross, Howard? What's your background?
Well, my background is very much on the property management, sort of asset management side. I started in the Port of Southampton, but moved quickly up into London and worked Insignia, Richard Ellis, or as it was then, Richard Ellis, the partnership. So you had the out of the city, out of Old Broad Street. I was there when the IRA bomb went off in Bishopsgate. So we have a number of years. We've been through a number of issues. I've worked both predominantly in London, but also I did a stint in Paris and looked after a property there for Cushman & Wakefield in their Paris office. And ideally, we met through a variety of those companies. So Rob was at Richard Ellis, I was at Richard Ellis. But in the latter time of our sort of career in the mainstream consultancy, we did a time at GPT Helverton. So I was a fund director at GPT Helverton, and Rob bought and sold properties across Europe and created the fund and aggregated the properties into the fund. When the Lehman's issue and the whole collapse of the financial market happened, Rob and I thought maybe it's probably time to do something different. So TAP was born out of that. And initially, it started on the basis of helping occupiers understand better the property they're in, and focusing on those smaller SMEs where you've got somebody who shares the role of looking after the property with their main role, which could be supporting another senior member of the team. It could be the finance director, the MD, or whatever. But generally speaking, there are people there who need that service to say, well, how do I comply? How do I meet my obligations? Oh, suddenly I've been served with dilapidations. What does that mean, and how does that affect me? And those are the sorts of things that we initially aimed to answer. We then moved on to the technology. Technology has come a long way in the last 10 years. I mean, if you look at the iPhone, we're coming up to the 10th edition of the iPhone and see where that's gone and where it is today. And, predominantly we now have a small computer in our hands and we should be using it and utilising it better than we currently are. And people out there, there's lots of people who are thinking, well, how can different sectors be done differently, improve efficiency, and deliver a much better experience? Everybody experiences WhatsApp, Facebook, Snapchat, whatever it is, LinkedIn. And I think property, how we experience property, how we get information, how we deal with things, how we improve efficiency, will ultimately come down to the palm of our hand in some form of technology. Mm-hmm. And there are many companies out there who are now looking at as to how they deliver that.
So you as a service are predominantly for the occupier then, or for the building owner?
I'm going to say all three, so I'll include the owner, the property manager, and the tenant. We'd like to think the tenant sits right at the very heart of all this, and without them there is essentially nothing. So we started off, as Howard said, thinking, what does the tenant get out of all this? And me, from my broking days, I'm afraid I'm guilty of it as much as any other broker. It's very fee-driven. And you do your deal, take your fee, off you go. If you're half smart enough, you'll have diarised the break clause in a few years' time. And, but obviously you've got to try and maintain that relationship. But the nature of that type of work is that you're straight off to the next deal. So there's the tenant, sort of left hanging, really. And particularly in the SME sector, there's, you know, they don't appoint a property person to look after them. There's probably no in-house property director. There's no one taking sole responsibility for the real estate. And when you consider the cost that it is to the business, it's a diluted function that is left to the office manager, manageress, MD, FD. You know, it's not looked after, and it's not high enough up upon any agenda, really. So we took the view, well, I think it should be. So what does the tenant get out of this contract? So yes, they're right at the heart of it, but the property manager, as Howard said, could do things an awful lot more efficiently. Mm-hmm. But then again, you know, we're looking at them as a very labour-intensive professional, and to think of change all the time, which is what, you know, prop tech and the industry is trying to force on them, is very difficult because they've got enough to do day to day. And soon enough, the next quarter comes around when they've got to keep, you know, they've got to start reporting again. So there's an awful lot that they have to do, and we believe that with some of the technology that's out there, this could be made an awful lot easier. So it's not only trying to make things more efficient for the property manager and for the tenant, but you can also start building brand conscious tools that showcase what the landlord's all about. You might then get to a situation where tenants are choosing buildings by virtue of who the landlord is and who the manager is, which at the moment tends not to happen. You know, good old location seems to be the priority.
So that's coming back to that concept that is particularly being pushed quite a lot through the sort of the real estate tech community of space as a service, and really selling that space and that brand to occupiers. What are your thoughts on space as a service?
Do you want to take that?
Yeah, I'll take that. I think space is becoming more flexible. Even with technology, people are now finding they can do much more on the move. They don't need the space and the requirement. Cellular offices are their thing of the past. Are desk sharings what you need to have? So there's a variety. Space planners are looking at different things. But I think there's a lot of tech companies coming out which are saying you can utilise more space. And if you take into consideration the retail sector, they use mall space very efficiently. They use it as an income stream. And we're now seeing where companies have created large atrium or reception areas. Landlords are thinking, well, there's space there. I could use it for touchdown space. I could use it for just simple rental, you know, rent a desk or whatever it's going to be. And I think the flexibility of space is clearly key. And I think the ability of Wi-Fi, the ability of 4G and then 5G when it comes along, you know, things like broadband, is that going to be necessary if we believe what people are going to tell us, where you're going to be able to download films in a matter of seconds, you know, and data is going to be coming. Why do I need to be in an office? But one thing that you always need to do, of course, is you need that human interaction. So will offices become a thing where, you know, you will go and have your meetings, but generally, you know, let's give everyone a Fitbit. If they're looking after properties, let's make sure they do their 10,000 steps a day by visiting all the properties within their location. Clearly, that's not going to be the case if you're looking after property from London in the southwest. But if you're looking at something which is, you know, within a half mile or a mile square radius of where you are, yeah, it's very easy just to get out there. You have everything you need as I said several times, in the palm of your hand. And I think, you know, with data coming along, people needing to filter that data, people needing to see how that data relates to the property that they look after or the occupier gets, then I think there needs to be technology in order to create that visualized image that you see, that the moment you go in, my dashboard looks fine, everything's green, let's go and meet people. But property managers need to embrace that at a much faster pace, otherwise someone's going to come along and do it for them.
So talk me through how all that feeds into, if I come and instruct you guys, I'm a SME or the owner of a building with an SME as my tenant, talk me through what I can expect from using you guys.
Well, what we would hope is that you've been attracted to the building for the right reasons, I'd say the right reasons, maybe a different set of reasons, because you know that you're going to get looked after. Let's assume you didn't even know that, and in the marketing of the building, none of that was ever mentioned. You would hope that, well, you will, when you arrive at a building that has tap running through it, you will be welcomed by us, personally, but you know, we will know who you are because your details will have been given to us. We ask for the most relevant person or people within each tenant organisation. It's not the whole workforce within an organisation that we're necessarily looking to engage with. So we will ask the property manager who the individuals are at that tenant company. So we will have their details. And we will then, through a series of introductory emails and or phone calls, make them aware of what they're going to get, which essentially, in its purest form, is a portal that we will design and build and have running through that building. And each of the tenants will have access to that. And there are layers of access. So the property manager gets to see everything. The tenant gets a slightly more restricted view. But this is an area where they will be valued and made to feel valued, that the information that they need day to day is accessible, and we'll tell them where it is, we'll tell them how to get it. They will also receive regular communication from us, either through email or through an app that we're developing. We've semi-rolled a bit of it out already, but you know, it's a very app-driven business. But at the moment, it's personal, and we will approach them, as I say, by phone call or by email to make them aware of what we're doing.
Okay, so tell, what about, what if I'm looking at that portal, what can I see? What's the information that, that I'm after, and how are you gathering that? What are you using to help that property manager better manage that building?
Okay, so the service is essentially split into two elements. So you've got the portal, which the tenant sees, so they get to see things like service charges, latest risk assessment, things that they need to have access to. So if we take Central London, we know that there are people in Central London who look at various things like service charges and risk assessments, but we also know that some of them are representative offices. So their people, or some of their people, may be based abroad. They may be based in New York, they may be based in Tokyo, Hong Kong, Spain, wherever it's going to be. So having the ability to access information 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, nowadays is just prerequisite. People say, well, I need to do that. You know, no longer do we bank by going into the branch, we bank on our apps and we do all of that. So we know that Sunday afternoon, how much money I've got or not. You know, can I go out? Can't I go out? Can I eat this week? Can't I eat this week? So you've got all of those things. So why can't you take that concept across, obviously, to your everyday life? So access to details and access to information that's relevant. We also then overlay that with messaging services. So the occupier feels as they are not only have access to it, but they're also being educated about what they should be doing and the importance of what they should be doing. For the property manager, they get a bigger dashboard to oversee. So we would look at, and we do, we integrate with a number of people. So we integrate with footfall people. So we can tell how many people are going through, or the building manager can do. Single sign on, he can see that detail. It's all coming into the portal or to the dashboard. You've got visitor management. So in a building like this, if you had an integrated visitor management system, you could see how many people are coming in throughout the day. Is there a pattern? Do I have the right resources on reception? Do I over-resource?
Have enough meeting rooms, which we never have here?
Indeed, you know, and those. But meeting rooms is an essential topic that people are saying, whatever business I'm in, there's never enough, because this one obviously is allocated to this resource, others, and people just nip in and do whatever. And every business I've been in, they've never had enough meeting rooms, and you end up sitting out in the lobby or sitting on whatever, or going to the local coffee shop, hence why we have so many, I suspect. Mm-hmm. So what we're using is more detail or more technology to grasp that information automatically. Now, everybody can take spreadsheets and upload spreadsheets with data, and you'll be surprised that the number of suppliers who work in the property management world who simply can't provide seamless data, but it is essential. So if you take waste, for example, I haven't yet come across a waste supplier who can provide me with a simple access to get that data. I can't tell you how much is being recycled, I can't tell you how much is being collected without a spreadsheet coming through and uploading a spreadsheet. So there's a long way for suppliers who are part of the bigger network for property managers to do a piece of work that says, what can I deliver?
Do you think that's because there seems to be a recurring theme over the availability of data? And do you think that's because we just haven't got the systems in place, or people just don't want to share, or people don't understand? Or what do you think is the the key element that's getting in the way of that? You know, they're not, you know, because there should be that waste data, shouldn't there?
Yeah, it should be. I think you're right. I think there's a mindset issue here about wanting to share. All the data is there. It's a question of making it available and making the relevant parts of it available and useful. It's never really been done before, but a lot of the talk at the moment, and this is where we firmly sit, is that that data needs to be displayed, made use of. It's all being recorded. It's all available. But to whose benefit is it? You know, we do believe pushing it down to the tenants to tell them, you know, about the performance of that building is important, is the right thing to do, because the data's all there. It's just sitting there. It's not being processed. But it's also useful for the property manager to know. And again, this comes back to our property manager dashboard, where you can then start looking at the performance of buildings and comparing them, and wondering why on earth one is performing better than another when essentially they're the same size, they're roughly in the same location. And that'll come down to efficiency of management. So the data is there, and that can reveal some of the shortcomings in the performance of those buildings.
And I guess that becomes important for investors as well at the end of the day, if they want to look at sustainability, efficiency of that building. If that data is available, then they can make a judgment, not just based on, you know, what the yield movement is, but actually how that building performs.
So is it enough to know that I'm recycling 100% of all the waste that I collect? Or should I be actually concentrating on the amount of waste that I'm generating? Mm-hmm. So there are certain buildings you might say, but if that building is exactly the same as that one, why is it collecting, or why is it generating twice as much waste? Albeit the company says I'm recycling 100% or 90%. But if you then look at all the embedded carbon in generating that waste, taking it to the building and, you know, creating the waste in the first place, then surely a sustainability expert will be saying, you know, first and foremost, cut down on the amount of waste you're generating, somehow do it some other way, whether it's reusable cups or whatever the issue is going to be. And so in time, maybe there is a role, instead of the property manager being as they are today, maybe the property manager will be more hands-on, a relationship manager, and maybe you'll have more analysts in property management and say, well, I'm just looking across all these buildings, that one's not performing well today, or that one's over, you know, got particular issues. Maybe you'll look at that type of approach to really improve the performance. It's almost like the Dave Brailsford approach, which is, if I just look at 5 or 10% across a number of things, then actually the entire performance of my building will be so much better. And I'm not sure whether the property management profession is at that point, but certainly it's going down that road.
I think that seems to be lots of the sort of responses that we've had to data collection is people are very good at collecting their own data now anyway, but don't understand how to analyse and read that data and really put it into use. So do you think there's a sort of a talent void there that needs to be filled so that people can, you know, sort of find those marginal gains in real estate? And where do we look for those people?
Well, I don't think they exist in the traditional property arena that we're used to. I'm probably not best qualified to answer that as to where they should come from, but I would imagine that the training of a young surveyor needs to be altered to reflect how things are now being looked at. And I've no idea, I haven't done my ABC for many, many years, but I would like to think that form of analysis would be part and parcel of what they're doing. And you know, it's vital that, as you pointed out, the investors know what they've got in their hands. And looking at the traditional matrices of rent and yield and tenant covenant is fine. But the fabric of the building, how it's performing, etc., etc., I don't think has really been looked at. You know, and a lot of the bigger buildings will have a BMS system that will help, but again, I don't see many examples of that data really being put to use so that you can then start building comparative matrices of one against the other. And trying to find a system that covers everything, you know, I'm not saying we've got the perfect solution, but there just simply isn't one. So for property managers looking for an all-encompassing system, you know, the search goes on, and some are thinking, well, we'll just have to build it ourselves because it doesn't exist. That then leads to obvious resource problems internally as to how to do that. So there isn't anything that is there off the shelf to provide an investor with his answers, with a property manager with his answers, a tenant with his answers. There isn't. But the data's there, we know that, but it's trying to corral it into the same place that's going to be the trick.
And now, a little earlier you mentioned that you were building an app. You've started testing it with a few people. Tell us a little bit about that app and sort of the trials and tribulations of building an app and what it's going to do and your hopes and dreams for it.
Okay, well, I'll just start off with the overview, which would be, you know, what do we really want an app for? And, you know, just because there are millions of apps out there doesn't necessarily mean the commercial property world needs one. So we've hopefully moved one step beyond that and said, yeah, okay, we think there is room for one, but let's take a very high-level view of it and ask ourselves what we want it to do. Because if you overburden it, it'll just become a replica of what we already have through our portals and dashboards. So, you know, we were talking about this a bit earlier about my banking app. You know, what do I want that to do? Well, it shows me I've got some money or not in my account. I can move it, I can pay some bills, and I can also press a button and that gives me a phone call into someone. I don't think I need it to do any more than that, to be honest. I'm sure there are plenty of other services that the bank can offer, but I'll go and talk to someone in detail about that, either in a branch or on a separate phone call. So that's just three principal services that the bank can do. And I think the commercial tenant, you know, could make use of an app. He's used to apps. So why not have some useful data about his building, the ability perhaps to report a problem, take a photo, send a quick message off, and a photo ID of the property manager or the relevant personnel that he might want to engage with, the ability to contact them, and maybe access to certain key documents.
There's also other elements where if you're in a newer building, the technology within the newer building may tell you on your app what that building is doing. So if I walked into a room and the building was intelligent enough to recognise my phone and recognise that I like the temperature at 19 degrees, I might be able to look at my app and it could tell me what the building is doing to get it down to 19 degrees or increase the temperature if somebody was in here before who likes it at 16 degrees or whatever it is. So, but I think when you get to that level of requirement, I think particular apps need to be designed for particular buildings because there's a lot of data that's being collected clearly in that building, and the majority of the stock that we have, building stock, is not that sophisticated. But as Rob said, I think the clear indication for us is that most tenants, when they raise an issue, most of them are saying they're not being kept up to date. They need better communication. What's happening? I've reported an issue. Is it being resolved? How can I deal with that? How do I know it's been resolved? Or has it broken again since you've repaired it? Or is there a long lead in to get a part or something? And I think the communication element, just keeping people up to date, is a big task for property managers. And there needs to be a better way. I'm not suggesting that we all put Slack into our buildings and that's the way we do it, but there must be a better way of linking communication regarding an issue with the actual issue itself so that anybody can pick up on that and see where we're going and how we're performing and whether or not we've resolved the matter. So the app that we have an app, so it is out there, but we're now completely redesigning our app. So we've had the sort of first stage one. So we know there are things, and as Rob said, you know, looking at building description, various elements that are in it, reporting problems, building news, that type of thing. But now we're starting to redress it and to make it a little bit more user-friendly as far as what people want to see and making it commensurate with the type of buildings that we're aiming to deliver it on. And when you then look at property, property managers will never be a tech company first, followed by property management. They're all property management with a bit of tech, so if they want to keep up, it's unlikely they will develop their own tech. They're going to have to integrate with somebody else, or they're going to have to work with somebody else.
And who are you finding the most tech savvy? Are the tenants demanding more of this kind of stuff than the property managers? It sounds like it might be that the real estate community is maybe marginally behind the occupational community.
I think that's a fair observation. And you know, when you look at the take up in the marketplace of one or two of the co-working companies, the big unnamed ones coming in from America, who are incredibly well funded and are taking London particularly by storm, and you see how full they are. You know, there's clearly a demand for that type of occupier, and you know, some are young startup co-working type companies, other are project teams from bigger corporates, but there's a space. We talked about space as service before. You know, there's physical space that is available in the market now, and the tenants that may then emerge out of there to take what we might call traditional commercial space might get a bit of a service shock when they land in a traditional building. But you know, as they're coming out of uni and they're wanting to set up their own business and emerge into the marketplace with their product, they're quite youthful and savvy and very expectant of immediacy and service. So I think yes, they are driving, you know, the demand here, and I think that's the difficulty for the owner side of the contract to keep up with that and provide the level of service that they might be used to or expecting. And you know, there's all sorts of things we know we can do on our phones which will deliver immediate service, and then we bump into the real estate world, which is lumbering along trying to meet that demand. And I think that is where the frustration will lie. And then if you then project that onto a project a property manager, you know, he's got enough to do already, and then to meet immediate expectation is going to lead to further frustration. So you know, if we were all sitting here today and said, right, let's invent property management, it would look nothing like it does today, and it would be very, very tech central.
How do you think it would look if we were sat here inventing property management?
We'd have our product right at the heart of it, obviously. But I think, you know, joking apart, it probably would. It would have something very similar to what we've got right at the heart of it, which is a hub or a platform or whatever you want to call it. And that can grow. And you can, you know, we talk about it being platform agnostic. It should be able to communicate with any system that wants to provide it with information. And then we talked about analysis, and if you can then analyze that data and then project it back out to the tenants and the property managers, then why not?
How far off do you think that future is?
Gosh, I'd put a time frame on it. I don't think it's as far off as you think, but it does require obviously buy-in from passionate people who want to deliver service, genuine service. And you know, there's a potential risk in that if you strip out some of the layers of management and try to convert those individuals to becoming, you know, relationship managers, that may not work. There may not be the right people to be performing those tasks. So you know, there's a delicate transition to be made here.
Do you think people see the value in that, in the ability to communicate and have those relationships? Or do you think they're still, especially I guess maybe putting your broker hat back on, they, you know, it's just all about the numbers?
We do analyse the communication that we send out. We find it puzzling at times when our best open rates on some of our communication is 50%. We got to 60 on one building, but you know, the obvious conclusion to draw from that is that half the people can't be bothered to open the communication or engage with us. And those are the best figures. You know, the industry open rates for should we say, email newsletters in property is somewhere around 20%, and maybe even slightly lower. Mostly we get well above that because we try and cleanse those lists and make sure we are talking to the right people, and also that the content of what we're trying to tell them is relevant. But you're then talking about, you know, the tricks of emailing or communicating. You know, that's, you don't get an RICS qualification for that. So it is, you're getting to a point where you had very different people involved in the industry trying to push service. And there are one or two landlords out there who are very, very passionate and active in that area, and they're becoming known for it, which is good.
Who would you put in that basket?
Oh, am I meant to be naming people?
You can name whoever you like.
Okay, well, I'm just going to pluck Derwent as one. You know, there's a brand image in your mind as to what their product might physically look like, but also a style and a manner about them, which I think has been very successfully promoted. And, you know, you may get to a point where people say, well, I will only go to a Derwent building, or I only go to some of their equivalents, because they've had a great experience. Conversely, there may be others that tenants will never go back to because they've had a shocking experience. And, you know, there's a small management company that we came across the other day, and even their name, This Property Matters, you know, says it all. And I, you know, we've been in to meet them, and you know, they passionately care about it. And I think provided they can maintain the amount of property that allows them to be that active and passionate about their service delivery, then great. I think, you know, the problem might come is that they get too big and too successful, and it perhaps gets diluted, but I don't want to speak for
them. I guess that's where tech can come in and be the enabler, isn't it? Because it can take, it can free up time so that the human interactions can happen more.
Yeah, although, I was talking to one of the bigger managing agents 2 or 3 weeks ago, and one of the comments they made was, we've lost the ability to communicate, i.e. we've lost the ability to actually pick up the phone and speak to people. They can send emails, they can send emails at any time of the day, but the ability to actually go out there and talk to people and say, how are things, what's going on, you know, is your building fitting your needs, what are the issues, then I think that is a bigger challenge. And this is where the millennials sort of sit by their phones and they use WhatsApp and Snapchat and all those sorts of things. But actually when you ask them to go out there and be a relationship manager and speak to people and go and see people and say hello, I think that's a challenge. And I think that's an area where people have lost. Even when you look at the telephone statistics in all of the big companies, how many people use the phone nowadays? 10, 15 years ago, it was being used a lot. Now, less so. You know, the phones don't ring. People are just, you know, sitting behind their social media and their other ways of communicating. And I think the power of the voice has gone. I mean, we went to see one of our clients, although we know them directly. And we were talking about, you know, what it is that they want from their properties. And they were talking about additional information about, you know, what the tenant is doing, what's their business doing, are they expanding, are they contracting, where are their markets, are they buying other companies. They want market data as well. And the property manager's best place to get that. He's seeing them, he should be seeing them all the time. But if he can't communicate and he can't put it to one side, the procedural and the processes and the other elements, and put those into a portal that are being automatically dealt with, then I don't think they'll ever move on to become that relationship manager. And I think that, you know, there is a struggle there, and I think there is a challenge that people need to get round as to, if you were my tenant, how am I going to have a relationship with you on the basis that, what am I going to know about your business? Are you going to open up about your business? What are we going to do? Because it's important to my client. They own this financial piece of real estate and they need to do something with it.
Yeah, and of course, if if we were more free with our data, we probably wouldn't need to have that conversation because we could dial it into a system and find it all out. So,
yeah. Well, you have to establish it, I think, as well, if the tenants are responsive to any of this stuff, do they really care? Mm. And some just want a roof over their heads and to be left alone. And so, you know, if you over bombard them, then, you know, you might begin to irritate them, and then the relationship is not as good as it could be. And that's where, again, we've set this whole thing up, was to try to remove this historic adversarial relationship between landlord and tenant and make it much more cooperative. Mm. But if you throw too much at them, they might get irritated.
So, talking of irritation, we always like to ask people what they hate about tech, or a piece of tech that they think is idiotic that people are trying to bring in, and then we usually finish with what you think is really cool and is going to change the world out there. But let's start with irritating tech or questions about tech.
Oh gosh, questions about tech. I mean, my little catchphrase might be, you know, there is so much out there that is potentially a problem looking for a solution, or a solution looking for a problem. You know, there's a lot of unnecessary stuff that is being sold to property managers and owners that is irrelevant. You know, some whiz kid has come up with a great new idea, and you know, it's just not going to work. So there's a myriad of small things, and I think we talked about our app a bit earlier, to take a higher view of it, to think, well, hang on, just let's not run before we can walk here. I know you're going to ask me for examples, and
you don't have to name if you don't want to, but if you explain what they do, maybe. If it was an app that tells you the colour of people's shoes as they walk into an office, maybe I can see that would be a bit useless.
Howard, do you want to answer that one?
I think that's
I need to spend more time thinking about real irritants.
I mean, there are a lot of apps that you think, really, why do I need it? So, for example, Rob and I have sort of semi-electric cars, and you have an app for the car, you just think, really, half the time it doesn't work, half the time it irritates me because it really doesn't do what it's supposed to do. I have the ability to change any settings I want when I'm in the car, and if I get my act together, I just do that because I just get frustrated if I'm trying to use the car app anywhere else. So in the end, I think, you know, there are people automatically think, oh, I've got this technology, I need to have an app. And I think there are too many wasteful apps out there which, quite frankly, are just a gimmick. I don't really need it. So, you know, as far as I can see, too many gimmicky type of things. I don't necessarily see the value of Snapchat and things like that. I don't
understand it.
No. But my children...
children can't live without it.
Can't live without it. You know, putting all of those funny faces in front of you, quite frankly, I've got better things to do.
And what about then, finishing on a positive... The tech that you think is out there that could revolutionise real estate?
For me, I think it's going to be AI. Let's just you know, run with this for the minute. Do I need a portal if all I need to do is just ask Siri about my building and he can get all the information he needs? And I say, give me my budget, and he sends me my budget. Do I need a portal? So in 10 years, maybe I don't need a portal, maybe I've moved on to something else.
So will there be a tap AI, and have you got a name ready?
No, we don't, but I do think AI, as Howard's pointed out, is absolutely at the forefront of where all of this could change. And it's very, very key, very much the buzzword at the moment, and it's certainly not going away. But it does take enlightened people to embrace it. Mm. You know, and I was sent a pair of virtual reality goggles the other day for a building in the city to look around. Now, okay, that's fine. That was for a building that's just about complete. Now, alongside that is a physical brochure you know, with nice pictures and CGIs and floor plans. And, you know, it was quite an interesting viewing. But I didn't think those goggles were relevant for that building. If it's a greenfield site and there's nothing there at all, then visualising a future development, a business park, whatever it may be, Google's city in Toronto, for example, then yeah, fine, because you've got nothing in front of you until you put these things on. But for a building that's virtually complete, I think, again, probably unnecessary for that viewing.
And I guess, what do you naturally go to? Do you go to the, when you had the brochure and the goggles, did you think it was easier to look through the brochure or put on the goggles?
Well, you always gravitated back to the brochure. And it was a very interesting viewing, because one of the agents had the brochure and the other had his iPad with the goggles as well. And more often than not, we drifted back to the brochure. So we're not there yet. You know, it's I get it when you're say you're away or overseas or whatever, and you want to show your client what this building looks like. When you're not there, then fine. I think that works really, really well. But as part of a physical, normal, conventional viewing, perhaps not. I think that's a solution looking for a problem.
So there's a time and a place for tech, it seems.
I think there is. I really do. But you still, you're always still rummaging around for a bit of paper. We're not quite over that yet.
And long may it continue, because we still have a paper product here as well. So
I do enjoy your paper product, but I do click on Fridays and go through that. And then, funny enough, when it does arrive the next morning at home, I don't give it as much time as obviously as I used to. So I have read it already.
Well, you get to look at it early on a Friday, so that's the benefit of being a digital subscriber. Tell us, or tell the listeners, where they can get in touch with you if they want to find out more about TAP.
They can go onto our website, which is www.tap-in.co.uk, and they'll get hold of us there. We do have a free phone number, and that number is available on our website. I'm more than happy to give it to you now, unless Howard, you can remember it off by heart.
0800 865-4450.
Brilliant.
And are you active on Twitter? Are you Instagram mad? Snapchat? No.
We have a Twitter account, and it's a relatively new thing to us. I think we've got just shy of 500 followers at the moment. But you know, we issue a monthly newsletter, and we then tweet those articles out. And you know, it's definitely a medium that we want to exploit much more of.
So if people want to connect with you on Twitter, it's at
TapTalk1.
Yep.
TapTalk1. Brilliant. Well, Rob, Howard, thank you ever so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Great pleasure. Thank you.
So you see, sometimes no matter how techie you want to be, paper still does remain attractive. And thank goodness for that, because EG does still have a paper product along with everything that we do online. But before I say goodbye, just do make sure to tune back in with us next week. We will have an interview with someone very, very exciting, or at least I think is exciting, and some details of a new competition that EG will be launching for all you prop techies out there. So join us next Tuesday for Tech Talk.